You know how? All right, can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
All right. All right, this week's Torah portion is Torah portion number 38, Korah. Everybody say Korah.
Korah.
So in Hebrew it's Korah. We usually pronounce it Korah. And so Korah is Hebrew for the name Korah, which is in turn means baldness, ice, hail, or frost. And so it covers several aspects, but we're going to focus on the baldness part and why does it mean that. Torah is going to be in Numbers 16, verse 1 through 18, 32. The half Torah is 1 Samuel 11, 14 through 12, 22. The topics in the portion is chapter 16. It focuses on Korah's rebellion and 250 wanting to be priests. Korah's rebellion and 250 wanting to be priests. Chapter 17 focuses on the plagues due to rebellion, killing 14,700 in Israel. Aaron's rod became a sign by Elohim against those grumbling. This is pretty amazing to me. Korah's rebellion, and we know what happened with Korah. In the very next chapter, there was another uprising. And 14,700 die from the plague. Before the man of God can call on Jehovah to stop the plague, it already slew 14,000. It was moving rapid. It would have killed many. But he went to Jehovah on their behalf and put a stop to it. In chapter 18, the responsibility of the sons of Aaron being priests. So he's going to reiterate the responsibility of Aaron's sons being priests. It's going to be spoken again. Because we know that Aaron was a Levite, and it was Aaron's sons that were priests. And so this is very important for us to understand. All priests are what? But not all Levites. Aaron's sons were called to be that in that line. And Korah somehow let some stuff rise up in him. And he didn't like what Jehovah did. He didn't like his call, his plan. And so he figured he would get a gang together and rise up against what Jehovah had announced. So this week's Torah portion is called Korah, wherein we see a continuation of the theme of rebellion. And this has been going on for several Torah portions now. We see this happening. And these chapters are very critical for us to take careful heed to, lest we find ourselves being caught in the sixth sin of rebellion against Jehovah, or against any that he has called and appointed to lead and teach his people. This is important. Listen, sometimes people come up with ideas. You know, you're going along, especially in the Hebrew Roots movement. We're going along, we're learning a lot of things. And then all of a sudden we know a little bit more than we knew. And then all of a sudden, because we know something, we want to suggest that somehow maybe we ought to do something this way or that way. This is what happened to Korah. He's watching everything happen, and he learns a few things. And he says, you know what? I don't like that God only using Aaron's line and not our line. We're all Levites. That's what he started doing. We're all Levites. And how is it we don't get to do what they're doing? How is it we got the dirty jobs over here and they get the good job? This is his thinking. He didn't keep it to himself. He shared it with other people. And then they shared it. And it wasn't long, he had 250 men of renown. Men of renown, leaders in their divisions on his side. Now that can get really out of hand real fast. And so Moshe He just goes to Jehovah with it because he knows it's beyond him to fix what his problem is. He has. It's beyond him. And so Jehovah fixes it. Now, we would say what he did here is not so polite. Wasn't so loving. He didn't give him a chance for counseling class. You know what he did. But we have to take this in consideration. There's a lot of stuff happening here. And if he allows this type of behavior to happen, then it's going to get out of hand. And so we're going to start reading in Numbers chapter 16, verse 1. Now, I don't have these in the slides, but I'm just going to read them as I go, talk as I go. So I'm going to come off the slides for a little while. And Korah, the sons of Yitzhar, sons of Kohath, the son of Levi, took both Dathan and Abiram, the son of Eliashib, the son of On, the son of Peleth, the son of Reuben. And they rose up before Moshe with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, called ones of the meeting, men of name. These are people who had people that looked to them and respected them. They looked to them and respected them. They were people with name recognition. This is important to understand because what Korah did, it wasn't something that was done out of a reaction. This is premeditated. He thought about this for a long time, and then he started going down the line, getting his people with him. He went from one to the other, and now he's at 250, and he says, well, I think we got our group. Let's assemble now. And then they assembled. What it means when they assembled? It means they had a meeting and didn't invite Aaron, didn't invite Moshe, and definitely didn't invite Jehovah. Now understand this, they're doing all this in the name of Jehovah. They're calling it a religious meeting. They're doing all this, and he's not involved in it at all. He's not supporting it. And they assembled against Moshe and against Aaron and said to them, enough of you. We've all decided you're finished. Now that's, maybe they got grounds. They thought they did, or they wouldn't have assembled. But do you understand that they're not dealing with Moshe and Aaron? They're dealing with Jehovah. Who called Moshe? Who set the bush on fire? Who told him, go, go, go 7 times, and then he went and delivered the people? Who did that? And who's still leading Moshe? So do you understand that Korah's problem is not with Moshe, even though he's making it about Moshe, it's with Jehovah. And so we're going to see how this turns out. Who wants to take a guess? So listen what he tells him. And he said to them, enough of you, for all the congregation is set apart, all of them, and Jehovah is in their midst. See how they ain't bringing him in? Now is he being led by Jehovah to say these words? Or is he using Jehovah's word, his name? He's using his name. And what does it mean to use his name when you're not called to use his name? He's bringing his name to what? To naught. All of them and Jehovah is in their midst. Why then do you lift up yourself above the assembly of Jehovah? So they're accusing Moshe and Aaron that they're lifting themselves up above of the assembly, that you're better than us. Well, listen, they're at the mountain, and the mountain's burning and shaking, and the shofars are blowing. You don't hear a peep from Korah. You don't hear nothing from this guy. He's over there trembling. And where's Moshe? He's in the mountain. He's in the fire. He's got to be called, because if he's not, he's dead. More than one time, he's dead. So we see this amazing thing unfold. As Korah makes this reply, he said, you have set yourselves above the assembly of Jehovah. Now, is that true? So it's a lie. So not only is he lying, at the same time, he's invoking the name of Jehovah, therefore bringing the name of Jehovah to what? Naught. Can you do that? Is he breaking the command? So is he in the covenant or out of the covenant? He's out of the covenant. So any judgment he gets is just. Any judgment he gets. And when Moshe heard, he fell on his face. That's what a leader does that's been called by Jehovah. When he heard what happened, he fell on his face. He humbled himself even more. And he says, he has no idea what he's doing. He has no clue what he's doing. God called Moshe, and there's no doubt a lot of people questioned Moshe from the time they left Egypt. They questioned him even coming back to Egypt. They questioned him when they left Egypt. They questioned the route they were taking. They questioned everything. They questioned there was no water, there was no meat, there was nothing. They kept questioning him. But Moshe, he wasn't doing what Moshe wanted to do. He was doing what God was telling him to do. And sometimes in church, that's what happens. Why are we doing the Torah again? Why are we doing this? Why we got to change this? Why are we not doing, why are we keeping different celebrations and holidays? Listen, Jehovah calls and he speaks, and I'm just listening to him. 35 years listening to him. And not every time it's been me listening right, but I had to make those corrections and keep listening. How many understand that this is not an easy task? You think it was easy for Moshe? It wasn't easy. And here Korah rises up and gets 250 of Moshe's leaders, men of renown. And they join this assembling against Moshe and Aaron. They join in. It's not an easy day for Moshe today. And this day right here, it's not easy. And that's why he falls on his face and he humbles himself, because he knows what's next. He knows what's coming. And he don't want what's coming for him because he loves him. How many know Moshe loves Korah? Moshe's going to go to God for Korah. And Moshe fell on his face. And Moshe heard, he fell on his face and spoke to Korah and all his company, saying, tomorrow morning, Jehovah shall make known who is his and who is set apart, and bring him near to him, and let him bring near to him the one who he has chosen. He said, I just want you to know. Now, you think Moshe's hearing from Jehovah? He said, tomorrow morning, he's going to let us know. I want you to know this is what's going to happen. So he's spelling it out to him. Do this. Take a fire holder, Korah and all your company, and put fire in them, and put incense in them before Jehovah tomorrow. And it shall be that the one whom Jehovah chooses is the set apart one. Enough of you sons of Levi. He's getting so tired of the complaining. Now, there was a reason Levi was picked, because that was the only group that didn't bow down to what? The golden calf. They're the only ones that didn't bow, so he picked them to lead in the priestly line. But they didn't bow down to the calf, but look at their group, what they're doing now. So amongst the leaders, within the leaders' group, we have this issue. And so what does God have to do when it's dealing with leaders? He judges real harshly. That judgment comes quickly. In a stiff judgment. Because leaders, because of their nature of the job, if they fall, many fall with them. Now, we're trying to protect the fall from leaders falling. This is serious business. I can't stress it enough. If you don't want to do this, then say no. But don't say yes and back away. Because this is no game. This is not for us to stand in the light for a little while and then it all just goes away. It don't work that way. This is serious business. And if people treated it serious, we'd have more here tonight. That's just the bottom line. You don't have to like that I said that, but I'm going to say it because God's telling me to say it. And sometimes people don't like what I say. Sometimes I understand that. But I'm not saying it for you. I'm saying it because he's saying it, and we need to hear it. Because this is serious business. If you're going to serve Yehovah and expect the miracles that he gives and the stuff that he wants to do in our life, we have to at least treat it like this is serious business. And Korah wasn't treating it that way. He had a job. He was a Levite. He had a task. He was the closest to the tabernacle. Where did that group line up? Remember when we were counting? Where did they line up? Right at the border of the tent. They were right at the tent. They were there. But he didn't like his position there. And so the enemy says, you know what? If I can get the middle part where the core is, the stuff that's holding this whole thing together, if I can get them in fighting, I can blow the whole thing up. So Yehovah has no choice but to make sure he quickly gets this thing done. So they get their fire holders all ready, put incense in them. And Moshe said to Korah, "Hear now, you sons of Levi. Is it little to you that the Elohim of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to him to perform the service of the dwelling place of Yehovah and to stand before the congregation to serve them?" He said, do you realize the job that you have? The task that you've been tasked with? Have you sat down and considered how important this is? If you get up here and you break bread with somebody, which is the word of God, have you realized, have you come to understand the seriousness of that task? Has it occurred to you how serious that is? That's what he's trying to tell Korah. Have you considered, one time have you considered, you've been tasked to take care of the most holy things? He didn't like maybe his job. I don't know what his job was, but maybe his job was, you know, taking down the poles. But he didn't see how serious that was. If he didn't put the poles up, we couldn't have no place. You know, the glory cloud wouldn't come because it wasn't put right. Every part you do is important. And don't think that your part that you do is not important. If you've been tasked with that position, take it seriously. Take it very seriously. You say, well, I'm not the pastor. You may not be the pastor, but you've been tasked with a job. Take it serious. Should I have to take my task serious and you don't take yours serious? And Moshe is trying to get Korah to understand, are you serious here? He's trying to get him to change his mind because Korah, at any point, Korah could have said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I messed up. Why did I do this? And he knew Moshe was a mediator. He knew Moshe would go to bat for him. He knew it, but he's not saying anything like that. I'm going to read that verse 9 again. Is it little to you that the Elohim of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to perform the service of the dwelling place of Yehovah, and to stand before the congregation to serve them? And that he has brought you near to himself, you and all your brothers and the sons of Levi with you, yet you seek the priesthood as well? Yet you seek the priesthood as well? Do you hear what he's telling them? Somehow, Korah got this in his mind that Moshe and Aaron was no better than him, and as far as he was concerned, Yehovah should have just called him to do it. He could have set the people free. Let me tell you where Korah wasn't. He wasn't on the backside of a desert being trained by Jehovah to lead sheep. That's where he wasn't. He wasn't put in a basket. Let's go back to the beginning. He wasn't put in a basket instead of drifting the Nile. And if it wouldn't have been for Jehovah to spare his life, he'd have been dead just like all the rest of the children. God's call on Moshe's life started a long time before Korah even thought about it. God had his hand on him for a purpose and for a time and for a reason. And sometimes we don't give count to that. We don't give count. We should give count to that. God could have called anybody to do what I'm doing. He could have called anybody to do it. But he didn't. And he called me. He called me from my fishing boat to be where I am. And I'm still here. 35 years later, I'm still here. And I'm going to continue to do what God called me to do. He said, do you seek the priesthood as well? Think about that. Moshe's just pouring his heart out to him, telling him, I don't understand why you're getting this away. You let this happen to you. This didn't happen over. It wasn't that day he woke up and he was having a bad day. Korah had been having plenty bad days, and he was doing his job, but he really wasn't feeling it. He was there, but he wasn't there. And let me tell you, I don't understand that. How can you be there doing something and you're not really there? Where did disconnect happen? What are you going to allow? When are you going to allow Yehovah that's speaking to you constantly? How do I know that? Because I know what he does me. You don't get by with it. There's not a thing you can do wrong in a day that you get by with it. He's pounding at your heart. Are you serious? You better repent. You better change your thinking, change your attitude. It's constant. Now you keep neglecting it day after day after day after day after day. Before you know it, the pounding goes. You get immune to it. You get immune to it, and you're shaking it off. And then you're going to have to get yourself involved in other stuff. And before you know it, the call, the very calling that God had on your life, it's no more call. It's a no count. I don't know how that's possible. I've met a lot of people that started out preaching the gospel, and they don't do anything today. I don't know how that's possible. I really don't. Is he still not God? Is he still not the God that calls and anoints and equips? He is. We got to take our position seriously. And he said, therefore, you and all your companions are set against Jehovah and Aharon. What is he that you grumble against him? Why are you grumbling against Aharon? Now there was some boys born to one father. And from one of them boys came Moshe and Aharon. And then from another boy came, and then down the line, Korah come from another one of those, from Kohath. These are all related. They're all related. And what we find, when people are related, we find a spirit of familiarity creeps in. Because you're related. You say, well, that's just Jesse. And they don't realize that when you say that, you might as well say, well, it's just Jehovah. How's that sound? That don't sound good, does it? That's exactly what you're saying. When you think that or say that, that's exactly what you're saying. Oh, it's just Jehovah. Well, you won't say that when you need a miracle. It ain't just Jehovah. He's God. He always will be God. He's the great I am. He's the everlasting Father. He's the Prince of Peace. He's Almighty God. And that's what you're saying. That's who you're calling on when you need a miracle. He's not just Jehovah. And when they spoke against Moshe, they were speaking against Jehovah. They somehow diminished their respect for him. And that's a dangerous place to be. You want to hear from Jehovah, we have to make sure that we stay in line or stay in the position that he called us in doing the things that he called us to do. In verse 12, and Moshe sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and they said, We are not coming up. They doubled down on their resistance. We're not coming. Now listen, this is being done in the ears and the hearing of other folks. Folks that aren't as strong, folks that aren't in leadership, this is being done in their hearing. They're resisting. Okay, y'all come up. We're going to take care of this. We're going to deal with this. I'm not coming. I don't want to talk. You wouldn't want to talk. You were doing a lot of talking a minute ago. But now you don't want to talk? How is that possible? Had a lot to say earlier. You had a lot to say to 250 people. And you worked your way through the camp and you got your group together. Had a lot to say. And then you come and make accusation, but now you don't want to talk? They got called up and now they didn't want to come. We are not coming up. Is it little that you have brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in this wilderness, and that you would also seize total rule over us? Oh, you're hearing this. You brought us out of the land flowing with milk and honey. What land is he talking about? Everybody say, Mitzrayim. In his mind, he wants to go back. In his mind, we should have stayed where we were. So let me tell you, Korah was set free. How you go from killing the lamb, putting the blood on your doorpost, getting inside and being covered to where you are there? How does that happen? Because he had that experience. Korah had that experience. He saw the hand of God. How do you get to the Red Sea and it opened up and you march across and you go, this is unbelievable. How do you have that experience and you get there? How is that possible? How do you see water coming out of a rock that can feed, that can give drink to 2 million people? How do you witness that? How do you witness the whole mountain on fire and shofars blowing and the sound of Yehovah's voice trembling through every fiber of your being? When he spoke, you can taste it. You can smell his sound. You can hear it. It was no getting away from it. How you have that experience and wind up there? Let me tell you how that happens. That service after service after service, when the conviction comes, the moment it comes, you don't deal with it. You passing it on to somebody. That's for Brother Scott and Sister Becky. They really need to hear that. If that's coming out of your thoughts, you're the very one needed to hear it, and you should embrace it. I've been rebuked many times by God, many times. And you embrace it, or you fight with God, and you don't win that. You don't win it on Monday. You don't win it on Tuesday. You don't win it on Wednesday. You don't win it on Thursday. You don't win it on Friday. You don't win it on Saturday. You don't win it on Sunday. You don't win it at all. Pick any day you want. You lose it every time. He don't bring the word to us and conviction come for us just to think, well, it don't matter. Let me tell you, David was a man after God's own heart. David was called when everybody thought he was a no count. His brothers thought they had the job. Surely we're the next Mashiach. We're in line for it. They knew Saul was being rejected to be king, and they had to have somebody. Samuel, fill your horn with oil. Phil, how long are you going to mourn for Saul, seeing I've rejected him? Go down to Jesse's house. And he goes down to Jesse's house, and he brings out the oldest, the firstborn, the secondborn. He brings them out, passes them before him. He said, no, it's not it. We want to know why. Why it's not it? He's the first. He's in line. He should be it. We know he should be, but he's not it. Do you have another son? I have one out in the field keeping the sheep. Go get him. They bring in this boy. He comes in. He's standing there. He don't have a clue what's happening. But when Samuel pulls that horn of oil out, he knew what was happening. Because he had many experiences with the father on his own out in the field keeping sheep. He can relate. He can sense something. Something is happening. And when that all started going through his hairline and coming and dripping down the side of his face and going down his neck, let me tell you, David understood what that meant. He understood that he was now Mashiach, means anointed. The word Mashiach just simply means anointed one. He knew he was the anointed one. And now he's king. Let me tell you, Saul was king, but David won the hearts of the people. And because he won the hearts of the people, he knew it was just a matter of time. Let me tell you about David. At any time David wanted to, he could have killed Saul. That's how powerful he was with the people. Anytime. It didn't matter. On Monday he could have got him. Tuesday he could have got him. Wednesday. You name any day he could have got him. But he knew that God anointed Saul and he wasn't going to touch that. He knew that he couldn't speak against it. The people didn't love David because he bad talked Saul. You understand? They didn't love him because he back talked him or said bad things about him. They loved him because he was for the people. He was for standing on truth and principles. That's why they loved him. Not because he had to go bash. He didn't bash him at all. And he couldn't speak against him because God had called him. And when God was finished with him, the life would end, and then David would be king. So there came a time Saul constantly tried to kill David, constantly pursued him, constantly did it. But David wouldn't say a thing. And at one time, the Lord had David go and get Saul while he was sleeping in the cave. Took a piece of his cloak and cut it off and then carried it out and put it on a pole and showed him, I could have killed you last night, but I'm not doing it because you're still king. You're king. And he didn't say he was a has-been. He didn't say he was a nobody. You're king. You're still king. Until Jehovah takes the throne from you, I'm not taking it. Everybody wanted him to take it. And so finally the day came when Saul died in battle. Now, who's king once Saul dies? Do we have to have another anointing? Or was the anointing already done? He was anointed to be king way before he was king. And he conducted himself like a king way before he was king. He took his job seriously even before he had to be serious. It meant something to him. It meant something to David. It meant a lot to him. But David, being king, he got a little relaxed. He relaxed a little bit. You know, I'm king. I'm so tired of going to battle and all this. And you know that David never lost a battle? You go read all about his battles. Never lost none. The only battle David lost was the one of his own life. That battle he couldn't overcome because he got a little complacent, got a little relaxed. He people loved him. He just everything he touched was turning into gold. It was wonderful, and he got relaxed. And David got up on the housetop, and instead of praying and reading the Torah on the housetop, which he usually do, he's not doing it no more. He's just looking around. When you're looking around, you're looking for something, and you're going to find it, and it's going to snatch you out. And so his eyes were looking. Before you know it, he was trying to self-gratify. I'm a satisfied of flesh. And his flesh, so when David stepped out of walking in the Spirit, which Saul never learned how to do, he never learned, the Spirit came on Saul, and he prophesied. He prophesied true matters straight from Jehovah. Saul did that. He prophesied true matters straight from Jehovah, but didn't know how to walk in the Spirit. He couldn't keep that flow going. David knew how to walk in the Spirit, and all of a sudden stopped walking in the Spirit, and he got in the flesh. As soon as he got in the flesh, he looked over there, and there was this beautiful woman. Wow. Who's that woman for? Who's that woman for? Oh, that's Uriah's woman. The moment that said that, that man's he's married. She's married to that's my captain. He's my captain. Captain in the army. So he starts thinking, he's my captain. I can make this thing work. All flesh, 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 flesh. I can make this work. You know, it don't make sense to everybody else, but I can make this work. I'm the king. Have her come up here. I want to talk with her. So she brings this woman, beautiful woman up. And her husband's on the battlefield. And so David, all flesh, he's like, you know, we've been talking, chit-chatting back and forth, me and you. Why don't we get together and have a little dinner tonight? Should he be doing that? He knows better than that. She's a married woman, but he's going to do it. We're going to have a little dinner tonight. So he has a little dinner, and the dinner leads to more stuff. Because it's never, flesh never has enough. The flesh, you feel good for the dinner, and you're glad she come over, but it never has enough. It always wants more. And so you say, you know what? Let's make it a nightcap dinner. You'll stay over here. I'll put you in a nice, your own little palace there. I'll have, and he must have decked it out. He must have spent all kind of money, decked it out. And she gets in that little, and that now it's a nightcap. So he's there in his bed, and she's in her bed, and David can't resist. He goes in there, and he starts having relationships with this woman that's married. And they have relationships, and she gets pregnant. Now he's got a problem. He's got a real problem. And the woman's carrying the problem he's got. Now he could say, well, I'll just lie. I'm just going to lie and say, oh, it must be. But she knew. Now I can lie. David could lie, but how's he going to get her to lie? She ain't lying. But he's a lie. He's going to lie. I'll just tell him it was somebody else. It wasn't me. He knew that wasn't going to work, so he's thinking, how I make this thing work? I know what I'll do. I'll call my captain in. And me and him, I'll have to do a little party for him. I'll throw a party for him. Calls the captain in. The captain comes in. And he gives him something to drink. He says, man, drink. He said, look, you've been on the battlefield for a long time. I want you to go home and be with your wife. Like he's doing something good for the guy. Go home and be with your wife. So Uriah leaves from there and goes down and starts thinking he's on his way home. David sends people out to tail him, you know, tail this guy and see what he does. He goes home and he goes, man, I can't go be with my wife because my men are in the battle right now. That's integrity. Which David lost the moment he got in the flesh. He lost his integrity. It was gone. He had no more integrity. He wasn't a stand-up guy no more. He was an adulterer. And he lost that integrity. And he said, they reported back to him and said, David, we were watching him. He got to the door. And he slept outside. He said, He did what? He slept outside. Oh, man, that's terrible. Well, let me think what I can do. Call him back over here. David writes a letter. He writes this letter and says, to the leader out in the army, he says, take this leader here, this captain, put him on the front line in the battle, the heat of the battle, where people are dying every day. And he rolls that letter up, seals it with his seal, and gives it to Uriah. Gives his own death letter. Gives it to him. And he takes it back to the commander there, gives it to the commander, and the commander, he said, this is from the king. Oh, it's from the king. They stop everything. When you get a letter from the king, you stop everything. Everybody's clear up. Stop. He breaks the seal. He looks at it. And standing in front of him, the guy that delivered it, he rolls it back up. Can you imagine how that guy felt? He must have said, what does this idiot do to get this letter? What did he do? Well, no matter what, the king ordered it. And so it's time. So he puts him out on the front line. And you know what he did? He went and died for the king. He died for the king because he believed in the king that much. And the king was the one that got his own wife pregnant. Now I'm getting somewhere with this, but I'm telling you the whole story. So David thinks, you know what? I'm scot-free. I got it. So he brings the woman to live with him. She's living with him. She's walking around all pregnant and everything. But he forgot one thing. You might be called, but there's somebody else called by Jehovah also. The prophet, Nathan. The prophet Nathan, he's praying, and all of a sudden the Lord speaks to him, go to King David, and I want you to tell him this. He said, okay. That's what prophets do. They don't care if you're the king or not. They come in to tell you. You don't have to like it. They're coming to tell you. They're going to say what God said. Not everybody liked what Moshe had to say. Korah surely didn't like it, but he said it anyway. He said it, whether you liked it or not, he said it because he knew he had. If he didn't say it, then God would replace him. And so Nathan comes before the king. When the prophet comes and Nathan's on his throne, and they say, the prophet Nathan's here. Come in. And so Nathan, the prophet's coming, and King David's there, smile on his face, you know, he's got the scepter in his hand, and hey, what can I do for you, prophet? You need anything? What you need? I get you anything. He wasn't there to chit-chat. He said, let me tell you a story. So I'm going to tell you about this man who had all kinds of sheep. He had all kind. Any kind he wanted, as many as he wanted. He was rich. He'd go out in the field and pick hundreds of them. He could pick any one he wanted. And he had some friends coming over, and he was going to make a supper for them, so he needed to kill a lamb and prepare it for them. He looked at all his lambs and said, I don't want none of them. He looked across the street, and there was this poor man. He had one lamb. One lamb, that's all he had. He worked his entire life to keep this lamb. That was, and I want you to know, I wonder if that was his lamb for Passover. You ever thought of that? Which makes it even more egregious. The only thing he had, this, I'm keeping this one. Passover's coming. If that was what it was, I don't know. I'm just saying it. That's what come to me when I was reading it again. This one lamb's all he got. And while the man was sleeping, the man across the street goes over there and takes his lamb, steals it from him, kills it, and feeds it to his friends coming. He said, King, what you think about a man do something like that? King David takes the scepter. That man ought to pay fourfold. That's terrible. Where is he? Where is that man? Go get him. He got to pay fourfold back. And Nathan took a step back and said, that man is you. It got quiet. It got real quiet. That man is you. You did that. And you better straighten it up. Because what you just said was the judgment's coming. He spoke the judgment out of his own mouth, fourfold. And that fourfold judgment came to David, and he couldn't say a thing about it. He couldn't complain about it. He couldn't squawk to God about it. So what David did is what everybody has to understand. This is what the difference marks a person who really understands when Yehovah calls you. I don't care how bad you messed up. If you'll do the next steps, that's what changes your life. David took his crown off, took his robe off. He said, I'm king no more. The moment the crown comes off and the robe comes on, you can call him king all you want. He's saying he's not king. And he fell on his face for 7 days. He didn't eat or drink. And he begged God for his life and the life of his newborn. He begged God. He said, I have sinned against thee, and only I have sinned. I've done this. And he not only repented of his wrong, but he asked God to restore him. He asked him to put me back in right standings with you. He cried out to God. And God took that king that was ruined. His life was ruined. His life, he ruined his own life. All the stuff God had planned, he ruined it. But the point of this is this. You might mess up big time. But Yehovah is bigger than the mess up you have. If he's not, then we're all in trouble. If he ain't bigger than the mess up we got in our life, then we're all in trouble. If he ain't bigger than the mistakes we got, then we're all in trouble. He's bigger than all that stuff. And he paid the price in full for our being restored. And so if you read Psalms 51, it's the prayer that David prayed on his comeback prayer. And let me tell you, it's absolutely incredible. I encourage all of you to read Psalms 51. Go back and read it again because it's beautiful. Because it talked about all the right things you need to tell him. And God is not going to accept anybody back with attitude. He don't accept you back because while you're trying to explain why you did what you did. Could David explain why he took another man's wife and had the man murdered? How can you explain that? There's no explanation for that. It's wrong, 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 wrong. And when we mess up, we do wrong, it's wrong. It ain't right for me, it ain't right for you or anybody else. If we mess up, it's wrong. But we have to repent. We have to ask God to forgive us. And so Korah got himself in a mess because he wouldn't change. He's doubling down on everything rather than repenting. And because he didn't repent, now David repented, and God accepted his repentance. Did his son still die? Yes. Because he spoke the judgment. Now, could God have healed his son? He could have, but he couldn't override the judgment that was spoken out of David's own mouth. Words are very important. Very important. Did David get to build the temple? Did he get to, he collected the material, lots of the material, but did he get to build it? No, his son had to build it. He suffered every one of those things. But I want to just tell you this. Is God going to bring David back to sit on the throne? That's the goodness of God. That's the glory of God. That's what's so wonderful. You can have a comeback if you want it, but you got to repent and teshuvah and get back to the source. When you do that, life changes for you. But here we find Korah. He's not finding that. Moshe's trying to help him. He can't find that spot. And Moshe sent and called Dathan and Eliab, and they said, "We're not coming up. Is it little that you have brought us up out of the land that flows with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you would also seize total rule over us? Also, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of the fields and the vineyards. Would you bore out the eyes of these men? We are not coming up." He said, "Do you think we don't see what's happening? You think everybody's blind? You've been telling us a land flowing with milk and honey. We're going to get them. We're going to get them." Listen, this is why you got to be careful when you're on a mission and God sends you out and you're not the 10 that comes back with an evil report. That's the kind of seed you sow, and this is the result you get. You get this result. But Korah had been going sideways with Moshe and Aaron. This is not, but all he needed was that last little push from the 10 spies, and they gave it to him, and he come out, and he's going to stand against them. "Also, you have not brought us into a land full of milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of the fields and vineyards. Would you bore out the eyes of these men? We are not coming up." And Moshe became very displeased. Now, it takes a lot for Moshe to get displeased. Very displeased. Not just displeased, very displeased. "And said to Jehovah, do not respect their offering." Notice Moshe's word. "Do not respect their offering. I have not taken one donkey from them, nor have I done harm to any of them." Moshe said, "Listen, if you think this is easy, this job, it's not easy. I'm not in it for financial gain, trust me." That's what he's telling them. "I didn't even take a donkey from them. If they think I'm in this for financial gain," listen, Moshe, when Moshe left Egypt after killing the Egyptian, and he went to Ethiopia, he was a prince. Understand that about Moshe. He was a prince. He was one of the sons of Pharaoh. And they quickly gravitated to this prince because he could go on any mission he wanted and annihilate people, because people followed Moshe. He was a strong guy. He was a man's man. And we don't get that picture because all we see is the Charlton Heston picture of the old white beard guy that kind of creeping along. So we lose sight of who Moshe was. He was a prince, the prince of Egypt, Pharaoh's son. And when he went to Ethiopia, they wanted to make him a king. But he wasn't in it to be king. Moshe was constantly fighting that calling of God that his mother saw in him when he was just a baby, and she hit him because she knew something was special about this guy. There's something special about this baby. And how special it was that Pharaoh's daughter took to him quickly when she saw him, rather than saying, "We'll just kill all of the rest of them." He killed thousands. What's one more? Thousands of babies were being slaughtered. What's one more? But she took a liking to him. And he grew up. And the whole time he's growing up, he knows something's not right. What's missing here? God's calling him, calling him, and calling him. Then God, he kills the Egyptian, flees, and goes through Ethiopia and up to Midian. And now he's back on the backside of the desert there where his father-in-law, his clan is, Jethro's clan. And God shows him the bush burning and starts calling him more. Well, now he's got this visual. He sees this bush burning and not being consumed. God's lighting his fire. He's pouring it on him. He said, I've called you to do this mission. Go. I've called you to do this mission. Go. I've called you. And seven times he calls you. You got to go. Go set my people free. And he goes to Pharaoh after knowing what he did. And they wrote everything down. The oracles are all written down. They knew who this Moshe was. And God's callings on his life. But listen, no, Moshe was not in it for the money. If he was in it for the money, he'd have took Ethiopia up on a job that had made him king. And they would have, he could have rose up an army out of Ethiopia and went and took Mitzrayim. He wasn't in it for fame. He was in it because God called him to. He didn't understand it. And so now he's taking a stand. He says, Moshe became very displeased and said to Jehovah, I do not respect their offering. I have not taken one donkey from them, nor have I done harm to any of them. Then Moshe said to Korah, tomorrow you and all your company shall be there before Jehovah, and you and they and Aharon. We're going to put Aharon there. We're going to put you and them all there before Jehovah. And each one, and take each one his fire holder, and you shall put incense in it, and let each one bring his fire holder before Jehovah, 250 fire holders, and you and Aharon, each one with his fire holder. And each one took his fire holder and put fire in it and laid incense on it and stood at the door of the tent of appointments with Moshe and Aharon. And Korah assembled all the congregation against them at the door of the tent of appointments. Then the esteem of Jehovah appeared to all the congregation, and Jehovah spoke to Moshe and to Aharon, saying, separate yourselves from the midst of this congregation and let me consume them in a moment. And Jehovah spoke to Moshe and to Aharon, saying, separate yourself from the midst of this congregation and let me consume them in a moment. When you hear those words from Jehovah, you listen. He said, Aharon and Moshe, y'all get step to the side, because what I'm about to do, you don't want to be close. But, everybody say, but, they fell on their faces and said, O Elohim of the spirits of all flesh, when one man sins, are you wroth with all the congregation? Do you see what this leader's doing? Now, he should just get mad at Korah and say, hey, this is what you wanted, buddy? Go ahead and take what's coming. But instead, you know what he does? He falls on his face again and says, God, if one guy messes up, are you wroth with everybody? They take God serious. When God spoke, they knew it was serious, what was coming. And Jehovah spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to the congregation, saying, move away from around the tents of Korah and Dothan and Abiram. So Moshe rose up and went to Dothan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spoke to the congregation, saying, please turn away from the tents of these wrong men. Do not touch whatever belongs to them, lest you be consumed in all their sins. Then they moved away from around the tents of Korah, Dothan, and Abiram. And Dothan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of the tent with their wives and their sons and their little children. And Moshe said, by this you know that Jehovah has sent me to do all these works, that they are not from my own heart. Notice what his words are. And if these die, as all men do, or if they are visited, as all men are visited, then Jehovah has not sent me. But if Jehovah create what is unheard of, and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them up with all their belongings to them, all that belongs to them, and they go down alive to Sheol, and you shall know that these men have scorned Yehovah, not me. Right? Why is Moshe speaking this way? Because he don't take offense to what they're saying. He's offended that they're offending Yehovah. Well, how is that possible? Because if you are walking in the flesh, you're going to be offended. You in the flesh and you mad at somebody else in the flesh. What's the difference? If you're in the flesh, that's the only way you can feel or be hurt by somebody who's speaking in the flesh. If you're walking in the spirit, they're not speaking against you, they're speaking against Yehovah. That's why we have to learn how to walk in the spirit. We have to learn how to walk in the spirit. If you walk in the spirit, you won't fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusts against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh. But we have to learn to walk in the spirit. So when you got saved, everybody say saved.
Saved.
The old person died. The flesh dies. And now you're born again to the spirit man. Your spirit man lives. Now, we flip-flop back and forth, sometimes hundreds of times on a daily basis. Is that a practice that we should practice? Not at all. But we do it. Just being honest, that's what we do. Now, we got to learn not to do that so often. Because if you're walking in the flesh, don't get mad that somebody's in the flesh saying something to you. Because there's some people not born again. They're in the flesh all the time. All the time, 100%, all the time in the flesh. And you're going to bump up against folks who are in the flesh. That's what they practice. They practice being in the flesh. But we're to walk in the spirit. If we're in the spirit, they're not a fit. When they say something nasty, you just don't know how nasty they was to me. You're in the flesh. That's why it's nasty to you. What's the difference of you being in the flesh and them being in the flesh? Okay, this is me again saying stuff that you don't like to hear. But I'm going to say it because he's telling me. Now, if you're not in the flesh, what they say, you know it's against Yehovah. That's why Moshe said you spoke against Yehovah. Because Moshe wasn't getting in the flesh. If he'd have gotten in the flesh, he'd have beat Korah to an inch of his life with his own hand. And been justified, the people would have praised Moshe for doing it. Have he lost his everlasting mind? Is he crazy? They'd have backed Moshe up. Do you understand? Aaron would have been right there. Hit him, brother. Hit him again. Kick him now. Kick him. Kick him twice. But what the way? Let me get my lick. In the flesh. That's what you want to do. Now, if you ever felt that way, that's in the flesh. But how do you stop yourself is you have to think about, what am I going to do that's going to hurt my relationship with Yehovah? If I act out in this, it'll hurt my relationship. So I'm not going to do it. And you put a stop to it. You put a barrier around. I'm going to walk in the Spirit. So you have to walk in the Spirit. What's the first thing you walk in the Spirit when you're doing the fruit of the Spirit? What's the first thing comes? Love. If you start saying love, it's hard to say punch right after. Love. Now, if you don't say love, punch is the next thing. It's the next best thing. Or cuss. It's the next best thing. But that's in the flesh. What's the difference if they're in the flesh and you're in the flesh? Is there any difference? It's the same thing. We should both be judged if we get in the flesh. So Moshe wasn't going to get in the flesh. So he's always careful with his words. And so this is pointed out so valuable and so important. He said, if they die a natural death, who's going to tell? That's normal. Everybody dies natural deaths. If he falls dead right now, some people would get scared and say, ooh, it's God. Some would say, oh, he had a heart attack. Everybody has heart attacks. So Moshe's smart. He says, so God, it won't be a heart attack. He ain't going to have a brain aneurysm because other people have brain aneurysms. It ain't going to be none of that. What's going to happen is the earth is about to open up and take him, his tent, and everything that's surrounding him. And those who stuck with him, they're gone. Why? Because you shall know that these men have scorned Yehovah. Not Moshe. Not Aharon. Now, who was he speaking against? Aharon. So it's to get you to get in the flesh. They use the person. We're going to speak against Pastor Jesse so we can get him in the flesh. Well, you can say whatever you want against me because you're speaking against Jehovah. And I have to learn that and practice that. If I don't, I'll be offended all the time. I'll be in offense. Folks walking around always offended. You can't say no. If you look at them wrong, they offended me. That's flesh. You're in the flesh. You got to learn to not be in the flesh all the time. You got to walk in the Spirit. And if you don't learn how to walk in the Spirit, remember, Saul never learned how to walk in the Spirit. He had moments that the Spirit of God took him over and he prophesied, but he never learned how to walk in it. He always got in the flesh. He was always mad. And that's why he sought evil spirits, and guess what happened to him? Evil spirits came on him. You can't seek after evil spirits and not get something on you. It's like playing with fish and you don't get slime on you. That don't work. I play with fish all the time. Every day I'm playing with fish and I get slime on me all the time. Because fish have slime. And you play with evil spirits, you're going to get evil on you because they carry evil spirits. And evil spirits are looking for a host. They're looking for a host body. They don't have a body. They're looking for a host. And if you let them live in you, they'll live in you. But Jehovah wants to live in us, and he does it by a set-apart spirit, and we can have him, but we got to allow him to come in. And you're walking in the Spirit, constantly doing that, you're going to have more power and more authority in your life than you ever thought you could have. We see this happening with Corah. What's happening? So I'm probably off last year's message a little bit. A little bit. Just a teeny bit. And it came to be, as he ended speaking all these words, that the ground under them split apart. And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up with their household and all the men with Korah, with all their goods. So they and all those with them went down alive unto Sheol, and the earth closed over them, and they perished from the midst of the assembly. Now listen, when you go against Jehovah, he don't even want your stuff. And he don't want the people to want your stuff. Because some people want you gone because they just want your stuff. They're interested in your stuff. That's flesh. Remember, that's fleshly thinking. And so you have a whole group of people. I mean, if these groups are going to die, they got their tents, they got their animals, they got all their stuff. Why get rid of all the stuff? Because Jehovah was making a point. We don't want anything associated with them because that's bad seed. And that kind of seed will run rampant. It's like a plague. It'll run through this camp. It'll destroy everybody. Not one of you going to go in. You see how Jehovah dealt with this? Everything. Because of Korah and what he did, his complaint, his rebellion, he brought all this iniquity against his family, his children, his neighbors, and the people he got on his side. He talked them into it, and look what he brought against them. So let me just tell you this. What you do affects other people. You're not on an island alone, and you just, well, it's my mistake, I got to deal with it. It's not your mistake, it's everybody's mistake now. A lot of people got to deal with it. And we got to remember that when we mess up, it's going to affect a lot of people. Thank God for Moshe, keeping his head level. Thank God that Moshe didn't back down from the truth, regardless of who it is. He was a son of the Levites. The last person you would think that would do what he did. But he did it. You wouldn't think, not the Levites, not the leaders, not the pastors. Are y'all here? I'm just telling you what the Lord dealt with me about today. You know, I've been going over this and going over it, and I said, well, Lord, I don't think I went over it enough because I don't have anything clear to me yet. And so I put the audio on so I can listen to the verses again. I said, I'm missing something in the verses. I'm missing something. And I aim to get it, Lord. And that's what I told him. I told him just like that. I aim to get it. How can I aim to get it if I don't listen to it? If I don't read it? So I got over here. I got up in my office. And when I walked in my office instantly, I knew what I was going to talk about. That's why I'm talking the way I am, because I instantly knew it and I knew everything. It was instantly downloaded in me. Instantly. Because that's how good he is. I depend on Jehovah. I depend on him with everything. He's my source. And I'm telling you that we got to be careful that we don't allow this type of separation to come inside of us. This is flesh. It's all about flesh. And when you get in the flesh, you're always going to have the appetite. It's always going to be there, and you don't know how to walk in the spirit. And so you will fulfill the lust of the flesh. I don't care who you are, the best of the best. You will fulfill the lust of the flesh, period. You're going to do it. May not be today. It may not be tomorrow, but it's coming. You can count on that. It's coming. You're going to fulfill the lust of the flesh. So you know what we ought to be practicing? How to walk in the spirit. We ought to be practicing that. That's what happened when you got born again. We're going around professing we're Christians. We're believers. Well, guess what? You didn't just become a believer to be saved. You became a believer who's been given set-apart spirit. Now you have to learn how to walk with the set-apart spirit. And the set-apart spirit's not going to want to do the things that your flesh wants to do. They're going to always going to be at odds with each other. The set-apart spirit, it wants to read the Torah. The set-apart spirit wants to study the Torah. The set-apart spirit wants to go to Shabbat. The set-apart spirit wants to keep the feast day. The set-apart spirit wants to be at church every chance he gets. Every chance. Not the problem with the set-apart spirit. It's how much we obey. And you got to be obedient to the set-apart spirit. The moment you go in the opposite direction, that's all flesh, just so you know. Don't tell me I'm having a moment. You're having a moment of the flesh. That's what you're having. It's all flesh. You're having that moment. And so until you stop it, it's going to keep begging. It's going to keep drawing on you, pulling on you. Until you stop. When you put a stop to it, it's the end of it. And can you? You have the power to. The set-apart spirit is giving you the power. You have the power to become sons of Elohim. You've been given that power. It's by the set-apart spirit. When he comes in, you got the power. You know, folks want to talk about, boy, if I only had the power. You have the power. Our mistakes and our failures is because we lack to use the power. It's not we've been tricked. We got swindled. The devil set a trap for me. I didn't see the trap coming. You saw the trap coming. You helped him put the trap together. What are you talking about? Let's not kid ourselves. Amen. You dug the hole and put the spikes in and forgot you dug the hole. Somebody told me that the other day. I don't know who that was. Who said that? Somebody told me that. I can't remember who it was. I just know I heard it. You make your own trap and forget you made it, and you fall in it. Let me tell you, isn't it amazing how God is so good? Now, that was just something I heard, not really listening to it that good, but here I am, and the Lord says, you remember that story? And that's where it comes. I just popped up in my mind, just like that. I didn't put a note somewhere to remind me of that story, nor did I think of that story at any time other than that day it was said. But it fits right here. It's no trick here. You didn't get swindled by the devil. You were a player. You dug the hole and put the spikes in. You can't walk in the flesh and not have the results of what comes with it. You're going to get those results. And so Korah got exactly what was coming to him. Can you imagine? You're all standing there. And Moshe goes to God and says, Lord, don't take the whole congregation. Kill them all. That's what God was about to do. He said, are you going to judge all the congregation for one man's sin? That'll preach right there. And so, Moshe said, all you in the congregation, separate yourself from Korah, from Dothan, and Abiram. Separate yourself from them. Because what God's about to do, every person's about to see this. Can you imagine when the earth starts to quake and they're standing there going, what's going on? And all of a sudden it splits open. It opens its mouth and swallows up them and their stuff and then closes back up. Can you imagine the screams? Because they fall down, not dead, alive, it says. He emphasizes that. They fall in alive. Can you imagine the screams and the screeching that was going on when they're falling in and all the people going, what's happening here? Let me tell you, there was a whole different level of understanding of who Moshe and Aaron was after that. But it didn't take long to the next chapter that they did it again. Because when you're walking in the flesh, you're going to push it as much as you can. And that's what we got saved from. We know about flesh. We lived in the flesh from the time we were born, and we did nothing but sin. And when we get saved, we're going to stop sinning and keep His laws and His commands and learn how to walk in the Spirit. That's what we're supposed to do. That's what it calls being born again is. We're born again in the Spirit. Amen? So, that might be my stopping point because my clock just run out. So, and a fire came out from Jehovah and consumed the 250 men who were offering incense. Because while they're over there offering incense, the earth opens up, and the commotion's going on, the incense off, and they're doing this. What's going on? All of a sudden, the fire pans hit the ground, they're gone. Consumed them, 250. I bet that was a bad deal for them. So the fire pans came out from Jehovah and consumed the 250 men who were offering the incense. And Jehovah spoke to Moshe, saying, "Say to Eleazar, son of Aaron, the priest, to pick up the fire holders out of the blaze, for they are set apart and scattered the fire some distance away. And the fire holders of these men who sinned against their own lives, let them be made into beaten plates as a covering for the slaughter place, because they brought them before Jehovah. Therefore, they are set apart, and let them become a sign to the children of Israel." So what are they going to do? They're going to take these fire holders and beat them into plates. Beat the metal down into these plates. Then they're going to take the plates and cover the slaughter place. Why is that? That's a constant reminder. When they look at the slaughter place now, when it's set up, they're going to be covered with plate. They're going to be constantly reminded of the rebellion that took place. Every time. Because that's the place we look to. So, listen, when we get saved, we're going along in life, we get saved. And then God judges our mistake because we make a mistake after we're saved. Anybody ever make a mistake after you were saved? We just want to forget that mistake we made. But He's not telling us to do that. He's telling us to beat it to a plate. Because we have brought ourselves to Jehovah, therefore setting us apart. Now you mess up. Just like David messed up. He was set apart to Jehovah. But he trashed that set apartness. So he had to be beaten down to the ground for 7 days. He was beaten down. Beat himself down, because now the only thing can help David is to constantly be reminded of the slaughter place, the sacrifice made for all of humanity. Same thing with us. What's going to help you is to realize that there's something that's been done for you. Yeshua died for us, and we got to be constantly reminded of what He did. So the fire pans were beaten and put on the slaughter place as a constant remembrance of what happened that day, that Jehovah consumed 250 that held these things. All right, well, that ought to be a good stopping point for whoever's next. I might be next. One thing about the Word of God, it never ends. It's unending. And if you think you're getting tired of it, don't get tired of it, because once this life is over, this age ends, you have 1,000 years from the Torah teacher himself, and he's going to teach it every day, all day. So if it takes 1,000 years for the Torah teacher himself to teach it every day, all day, we're just playing in the water right here. We come and get our little, we get our Shabbat on Friday night, and it comes Saturday morning, and then we come on a Wednesday and we think we did something. Can you imagine every day sitting down being taught the Torah, because there's so much more to learn? So don't think there's not more to learn. I've been studying the Bible for a long time, and I pick it up, it's like brand new. Like I never seen this before. How is it I never seen this? Because that's how vast it is. It's so amazing. So when everything that Yehovah spoke, it has life in it. It's to benefit us. And we haven't grasped it to live at our potential yet. How many want to start living at that potential? You want to live in the blessings of Yehovah? You can, but let me tell you our biggest problem. We're in the flesh, we're out the flesh. We're in the flesh, we're out the flesh. That's constant all week. In the flesh, out the flesh. And we get all upset with people just like that. In the flesh. Don't make somebody do something wrong. Boom, there you on them. You on them. You want them to know. Don't do that. Sometimes you got to take some stuff. We talk about, man, Yeshua, look what he took. We don't want to really follow him. When we follow him, he says, you have to be crucified with me. We don't like crucifixions. Let somebody put a nail in your hand this week and see what you do. You're going to yank the nail out and throw it through the eye. That's what we do in the flesh. We don't know how to take anything, but we say we're followers of Yeshua. Have you been crucified with him? Think about that. Have you been beaten with him? Have you been spat upon? Think about all that. And he commands us that we have to be crucified with him. We're to take up our cross daily and follow him. Remember, it's constant. It's not one-time event. It's constant because we're still alive. We living with a person, that's us, and we're amongst people. And sometimes people are just people. It's okay. Why do we got to get so sharp with people all the time? And you're mad at them, and you're in the flesh just as much as they are. So how is that supposed to be judged? Sometimes I think the earth just got to swallow us all up. Because we don't know how to keep our mouth sometimes, or our thoughts. And we get real angry at somebody for stuff that don't really matter. And unless you practice this, you're going to constantly do it. And you better hope you're not doing it the day he returns, that you're walking in the spirit. And if you want to take that gamble, then I don't know if anything I've said tonight is going to help you. It's got to be serious to us. And we got to be asking him, consciously asking him, Lord, help me not to live in the flesh. I want to walk in the spirit. Show me how to do that. And that's with everything you do. And if you can't first learn how to do it home, you probably won't do it at your church. And some of you try to do it because the pastor's there. What good is that? You think that gets you somewhere? That gets you nowhere. If you think I'm going to get you somewhere, you missed this thing. I only can teach you what the Lord tells me. That's it. But you're going to stand before him by yourself. And we're going to be judged for the things we did good and the things we did evil. That's what he tells us. He tells us this. We're going to stand before him to be judged of the things we did good, things we did evil. Every one of us, individually, we're going to stand before him. So I want to be found worthy. And the only way I could do that, I got to let Christ live in me. If Christ is living in me, I won't walk in the flesh. I won't do it. Not if he's living in me. I give him rule and reign, and he's my king. And I'm saying, Lord, you take control. You're the master. The student don't tell the master what to do. The master says to the student what to do. So let the master guide your life. And you'll see. And let me tell you, it's not easy, is it? It's not easy what I'm talking about. It's not easy. You get up every day and there you are. You're in the world and people are going to say stuff. That's just what it is. They're going to say stuff to get you worked up or do things to work you up. Don't let it happen. Practice it and you'll get better as you go. You're going to get better as you go. But if you never practice it, you won't get better. You might have a week that you have a little lull where nobody rubs you wrong, but all it takes is one person and there you get set off. You got to practice it. The next time the person would have set you off and you don't get set off, then you know you just accomplished something. And you add to that accomplishment. You step on that. That's the next rung. Step on that one and you move up and go to the next one. It's constant the whole time you live. It's called sanctification. It takes a lifetime for that. All right. Well, God bless you. I love you. Thank God for the night. Let's not forget for in the morning. Come believing, expecting God to do great things in your life. Any special prayer requests?